Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. We've got Rick back today. Rick, welcome. Tony, we've got a lot of news to cover. It's a crazy week in Bitcoin. We're going to kick this off right now with Bitcoin's performance the last week. It overtook the market cap of silver, one of the oldest forms of money used by human beings. And this digital currency that we know as Bitcoin has only been around for 15 years. Rick, why don't you, it's been a little while since we've heard from you, so why don't you give your initial thoughts on what's going on here?
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, we don't talk a lot about price on this show because it is one of the least interesting things about Bitcoin, but how could it not be at the forefront of everyone's mind this week, right? You cannot find any signal about Bitcoin on Twitter at the moment because it's just memes and price predictions. And hey, you know what, why not? It's a lot of fun, right? You know, for 15 years Bitcoiners have been screaming at people like, you should check this out, you should do some research into it, it's valuable, it's going to be massively important. And I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been on like the Bitcoin obituaries websites that track all the times the mainstream media have hammered Bitcoin, or I mean, they've called us psychopaths, they've called us morons, idiots, it's tulips, it's a bubble. You had clowns like Rubini, like telling us we didn't understand economics. You had politicians like Elizabeth Warren building like armies of people trying to legislate against us. Yeah, you know, so there's a huge amount of vindication. So, you know, I don't really bemoan any Bitcoiners now doing victory laps on Twitter and posting memes. I mean, some of them are hilarious as well, right? Like, so yeah, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, to see that it's overtaken silver is, you know, throughout Bitcoin's history, there have been a few moments that feel kind of like pretty historic or meaningful. You know, a couple that spring to mind would be, you know, when like El Salvador adopted Bitcoin. That was wild, right? No one could quite believe, oh wow, here we go, a country's adopting it. Because again, that took us from this world where that was like a theoretical thing that we talked about, you know, a country's adopting Bitcoin, to becoming something that had actually happened. And again, now we're transitioning from a world where we always talk theoretically about Bitcoin becoming more valuable than precious metals, and now we're in a world where that's happening, right? So yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, if you're one of these sort of economists who has watched what's been going on for the last 10 years and sort of been dismissive and smug about Bitcoin and you know, derisive about it, I really wonder how you must feel today. And at what point are you going to sort of look in the mirror and say, well, hang on, you know, I must have missed something. I need to look at this thing again, right? Like, how could I possibly miss this whole sort of transition? And I think there's no excuse now. Like, you have to go and look into this because, you know, what's the market cap of silver? I think is, I noted it down, it's 1.71 trillion, right? And Bitcoin just went to 1.72 trillion. But another thing that's very likely to happen is that for a while, theoretically, we've talked about Bitcoin overtaking gold's market cap, right? And gold's market cap is 17.52 trillion, right? Which is another 10 times the size of what Bitcoin currently is now. There's going to be a point in time where it overtaking gold's market cap is no longer a theoretical thing either. So, you know, look, there's still time for people to who haven't gone and made the effort to get in on Bitcoin to go and get in on it. But you know, we've overtaken silver. That's crazy, right? The clock is very much ticking, right? There isn't a huge amount of time left. I think you can still do well and you can improve your life. And that's going to be true whenever you adopt Bitcoin. But the period in history where you can exchange paper for Bitcoin, i.e. crappy dollars and pounds and yen or whatever, that's quickly ending. You know, give it 10, 15, 20 years and I think that's game over, right? Then you just have to work for it.
Tony, what's your reaction?
Well, the thing is, the era of shiny objects is slowly coming to an end. You know, what's really hard for a lot of people is that we've had gold and silver for literally thousands of years, right? So when something's been around for so long, you know, generation over generation, you just assume that it's never going to change. It's always going to remain. It's always going to be like a safe haven, store of value and what have you. But every once in a while, you know, there comes about this thing which blows everything up. And well, you know, in the same way that electricity, you know, put away candles and the internet put away, you know, mainstream media, Bitcoin is going to put away all traditional forms of stores of value. But it's hard for a lot of folks to give that up because, you know, first of all, we've never seen anything like it. It's only 15 years old. And it does involve a brand new series of steps, you know, that may not necessarily be in everybody's comfort zone. But just because that's the case now doesn't mean this, you know, wonder, this innovation is going to cease to exist just because a few old timers who are still holding a lot of wealth in these traditional things like silver and gold, just because they say so doesn't mean it's going to be so, right? At some point, the better product is going to overtake and win. And this is what we're seeing happen. So it's no surprise to me that silver is going to be eclipsed by Bitcoin. And it's no surprise to me that much sooner than most people think, gold will also be in Bitcoin's rearview mirror, because Bitcoin like surpasses it on so many levels. It's like we can have a conversation for weeks about this. And you'll always have these old timers saying, no, but gold's been around for 5,000 years, blah, blah. Yeah, great. So it's not going to go to zero, but you cannot put it in the same ring as something like Bitcoin. Again, the world has never seen something like this, but now that we have it, you know, and it's proven itself over 15 years, I don't see it going anywhere other than, you know, upwards into the adoption. So you either accept that, you know, we're moving to electricity, like we like away from candles, and now we're moving from all these traditional asset, additional, you know, stores of values into something that nobody can corrupt anymore, or you just fall behind and you miss out on the opportunity of a lifetime.
Well said. So Rick, I know you've been performing some technical analysis and you've got quite an elegant pricing model. Joking for anyone listening, but I'm curious if you were to, you know, pull out your crystal ball, and we are, you know, not the kinds of guys who make a lot of price predictions, but I'm just curious, like, where do you see this going over the next year?
Oh man. I mean, yeah, I hate price predictions because they're always wrong, but I don't know. Let me think, right? Like I remember when Bitcoin was $100, right? And the idea that it would go to 1,000 was like, it sounded so stupid, right? We used to laugh about it. Like, oh yeah, can you imagine how rich you'd be? Ha ha ha. You know, and now a million kind of feels like similar to that, right? Like I know, like Samson Mao, right? He's always calling for $1 million Bitcoin. I think he's been calling for $1 million Bitcoin for a few years now. I mean, by the way, I love Samson Mao, right? And I love that he's turbo bullish, because so am I, right? Like Bitcoin doesn't really have a top because fiat doesn't have a bottom. But like, you know, we just said it just overtook silver. If it overtakes gold, that's another 10x. So could I see it? Oh, I don't know. I'll be conservative, right? I think conservatively it's going to be $250,000 or more by the end of next year. But if it went to $1 million, that also wouldn't really surprise me that much.
Tony, do you want to venture a guess or?
Man, I have no idea. All I can tell you is going up and really high up. These things, you know, when things break, they're going to break really fast. And I've always said it, that I suspect that something's going to snap in 2024, which is going to cause like a massive movement into Bitcoin, just out of sheer panic and fear. Look at what just happened in the last 7 days, you know, ever since Trump became the first US Bitcoin president, so to speak. Look what happened. We are seeing, you know, game theory on steroids now. Nation states are, you know, literally, you know, FOMOing against each other into accumulating as much as possible, you know, of this asset. And sooner or later, you know, the general population that's still asleep at the wheel is going to pay attention to this. And when they do, you know, like there's no stopping this train, you know, as they say. And how high it goes, who knows, man? I mean, this thing can go into like the high six digits literally in 48 hours. I mean, you don't know. We've never had anything like this. Who's to say that from yesterday to today, we went up 6,000 points? You know, who's to say that you don't wake up tomorrow and it's up 20,000 points? Like it's very hard to predict this because you've never seen FOMO of 8 billion people. Like when have we witnessed something like this? Or nation states, you know, FOMOing in into anything. We've never seen it. So there's nothing to compare, nothing to relate, to relate it to other than, you know, it's going to go crazy upwards because of, you know, the finite amount of this asset. So who knows, man? It's up, up, and away.
I'm still early enough in my Bitcoin journey that I don't think anything I say is worth consideration. This is my first bull run, so I imagine up is about as good as I can give for a prediction. But then, you know, like one of my cautionary, because I was there, you know, the FTX collapse, all that good stuff, you know, for a massive drawdown. So I think what people need to mentally prepare themselves for is that these highs that we're sitting at today are the lows that we see a couple of years from now. And that's not a prediction, but an observation that it's happened before. And if you think that you're gloating that you get to do it around the Thanksgiving table this year will continue in perpetuity, you might be disappointed. So mentally prepare yourself for anything. But Rick, yeah, I think if I were to just venture a guess, it would be somewhere in that range that you described, and nothing would surprise me if it stopped right now, if it kept going, if it went to 5 million. I mean, like literally nothing would surprise me. But
here's the thing, Michael. I mean, you said like you don't want to sort of make a prediction because it's not worth anything. Here's the truth. Like nobody's prediction is worth anything. My prediction isn't worth anything. All of these analysts all over Twitter, right? MicroStrategy is going to hit this price. Bitcoin's going to hit this price. It's nauseating, right? They've been doing this for 10 years, just guessing the price, right? And you really don't need to. I think the most important thing you mentioned is, man, when it's going crazy, that's the moment of like maximum risk for me, right? That's the place where most people make the most mistakes. So, you know, a few of the mistakes they might make is like, you know, buying stupid cars and stupid shoes and stupid stuff they don't need. And flexing their wealth as well. I mean, that always blows my mind, right? People start sharing like screenshots of Bitcoin they bought 4 years ago and the return they've made on it. And, you know, it's kind of wild, right? You just because you've made a lot of money, you don't necessarily want to draw it. Well, you definitely don't want to be drawing attention to yourself. You know, we do hear about, you know, people being mugged or attacked. Like, why would you be so foolish as to suddenly start running around flashing your wealth around? I mean, for one, it's not particularly like becoming of your character, is it, to be running around showing off that you're wealthy? That's not a very like, the way I was brought up, right? That's not a good way to behave. And then second of all, like, you know, there are people out there that would love to come and take your Bitcoin away from you. So just calm down, get your Bitcoin into cold storage. And by the way, altcoins are going to go fucking mental like they do every single cycle, right? But don't get tempted. Don't chase those stupid games, right? And yeah, just keep your head about you because it's easy to make mistakes in a bull market.
Absolutely. All righty, up next, speaking of price and the bull market. So this is, we cleared another record, and the analysts at Bernstein, which is an investment firm, are telling people to get into Bitcoin as soon as possible. There's sort of back and forth in this article between crypto and Bitcoin, but really the emphasis of anything specific is to Bitcoin. And he says, welcome to the Bitcoin or the crypto bull market, buy everything you can. And this is what I think, you know, it's easy to, again, this is really my first bull run, but I think what could be a little bit different about this one is that there really are players in the space that just simply didn't exist before, right? Like early on, it was the cypherpunks, you know, a bunch of, you know, people really interested in the technology, some diehard libertarian, you know, anarchist types. We got a little bit of, you know, like the early majority coming in, you know, the last 5-7 years. But now people are beginning to ask questions. And if they haven't yet, certainly when we hit 100K, there are going to be a lot more people asking questions. I guess my question, and Tony, I'll kick it off with you, is, you know, these sorts of predictions, these sorts of recommendations from investment firms, from Wall Street, to what extent do you think that plays a role in everything that we've been talking about in terms of where Bitcoin's going over the short term?
I think it plays a huge role, and it's very concerning to me that you have these big names making these public statements now. I think in the past, you wouldn't hear from them much because they assumed things wouldn't deteriorate to the point that they're at now. They thought maybe perhaps, you know, like they always do, able to kick the can down, you know, down the road a little longer, you know, keep everything going the way it is for a little while longer so we don't have to panic. But if these guys now are making public statements like this, that means things are really, really bad. which backs up my theory that I keep saying. I have a feeling something bad is going to break this year. And every time I read an article like this, or I hear one of these guys, reiterating that message, it just reaffirms that whatever it is that they're privy to that we're not is bad news. No matter which way you look at it, it's not just bad news. It's like horrific news. And if they're panicked now and telling everybody to, dump everything and go into Bitcoin, is because they see some seismic catastrophe on the horizon that's coming at an accelerating rate. So if you understand nothing, but generally like to listen to these guys, this should be your biggest red alarm bells going off now. Just do what they tell you, and whatever it is, I don't know what's coming. I just know that it's extremely bad. And like I said, when it breaks, it's going to break really, really fast.
So Tony, if I were to push back on that, while I think there's a really good chance you're right, I think the other side of that argument would be that these people still don't really understand Bitcoin and the problem it's solving. So like you're giving them credit that maybe they see something going on in the background that's a major problem. My sense is a lot of these institutions are probably looking at the ETFs more than they're looking at freedom money. And they view it as an asset class versus a new form of decentralized currency. And so I wonder if they're looking to, they're tracking the 4-year cycles. They're going to hop in at the bottom of a bull, near the bottom of a bull run, and then sell at the top because they don't get it. They don't really understand the fundamentals. I don't know that I have a strong opinion which it is, but I could see it going either direction, I guess is my point. Not that these people are stupid, but maybe that they don't see what you're seeing. And are still just speculating, view it as an inflation hedge or, whatever else they might, be talking to their clients about.
Well, look, it can go one of two ways. You may be right. But if they're going to sell for what? Like, what are they selling into, right? So if they're hoping that if they see massive money printing, okay, so that means they understand that the debasing rate is going to exponentially shoot up. And if they think getting into a Bitcoin ETF is going to eclipse that accelerated debasing rate and they still want to live in the dollar world, well, your theory is right. But I don't think that theory lasts very long because it doesn't make sense. One, it's extremely tiring. And two, how fast do you want to keep going to try to beat something that is turbocharged to zero, right? Like, I mean, Bitcoin is going to go to some parabolic number, but at some point, that increase is going to start slowing down. But, the money printing is not going to slow down because if it slows down or stops, everything blows up within 5 minutes. Everybody knows this. So if you don't understand it now, you're going to understand it very quickly when you hit these numbers. So this is why for me, it makes no difference whether they get it now or they get it in 2 years. At some point, they're going to get it and the result is the same.
Yeah. Rick, would you add anything to that?
It's kind of funny to me that people are listening to these financial advisors at all anymore. I mean, imagine in 2024 telling, it's so funny to me, right? You're a financial advisor and it took you until 2024 to realize that you might want to suggest that your clients allocate to Bitcoin, right? So if I'm your client at this point, right, I'm going to look you in the face and be like, what is wrong with you? Right. For like 15 years, you've said, don't touch this thing because it's like garbage. It's trash. It's a Ponzi. It's rat poison. Right. And all of a sudden you've woken up and realized that you were completely and utterly wrong. And now I should buy it. These people have zero credibility left. They have zero credibility. And I think, Michael, you said, oh, these people are not idiots. I disagree. I think they're complete and utter idiots. I mean, how else do you describe this? And here's the thing, right? So, when I was at university, I studied economics, and I know how these people think. Like quite a few of the people I went to uni with, right? They're Keynesian economists, and they really struggle with this paradigm shift that everything they've taught has been garbage. And the main problem with these things is that these people, they don't think for themselves, right? What they're very good at doing is learning information and then regurgitating it on a test. That's how they got their university degrees, right? Through memorization. But intelligence isn't the ability to retain information, right? Because the intelligence is the ability to manipulate and change information, right? And use information. But these people now, they're bullish on Bitcoin. What? You're bullish now after BlackRock came along, after El Salvador started buying it, and after a sitting US president is now saying, yeah, Bitcoin's a good idea. You know, what they needed was the Overton window to shift enough for enough of the other sheep to start walking in that direction that they were, oh, look at the other sheep. They're all going in this direction. We can now also go in this direction. And then they turn behind them over their shoulder to the sheeps behind them, which are their clients. And they're like, oh, guys, don't worry. It's all good. This Bitcoin thing's all fine now. It's absolutely bonkers, isn't it? And I think you're right. You know, they have not understood. They don't understand. They don't understand Bitcoin in the way that you do, right? They don't understand that fiat money is essentially doomed, that fiat has no bottom, therefore Bitcoin has no top. And yes, they are going to try and sell at some point and do all manner of crazy, crazy stuff that their clients are going to be downwind of, right? I think if your financial advisor is advising Bitcoin 15 years late, sack them, right? You should sack them. It's ludicrous. So yeah, I mean, so you read their articles and now they're calling for 200K and I'm meant to take your price target seriously. It kind of goes back to the thing we talked about at the start. Like, no one's price projections are meaningful. Everybody just guessing. We can all throw numbers around. So, yeah, no, I'm not a big fan of the financial advisors because they're often wrong.
Yeah, no, well, I completely agree with you. I mean, basically, anyone who's throwing around numbers in the traditional financial space, certainly not worth taking seriously. You know, the thing is, like, you've got folks like Samson Mao, who I also like a lot. He's throwing out, you know, a million. But I think you've just got to sort of take it with a grain of salt. But Samson Mao certainly has a better pulse on what's going on in Bitcoin than Bernstein or, you know, whoever else. Oh, yeah. I think, Rick, I stand corrected on, I think a lot of these financial advisors, you're probably right, are idiots. There are a lot of people who are hamstrung by the powers that be within their organizations. And so I know there are a lot of financial advisors who either get it, but they aren't independent. And so they're not allowed to recommend it. Like, I mean, they're strictly forbidden to recommend that to their private clients. Now, I think there are probably many more of them, though, who have drunk the Kool-Aid of Bitcoin as a speculative asset, you know, and that's sort of their generous way of saying it seems like a bubble or whatever. But I think those days are probably beginning to come to an end. And I think that's where things will get crazy because to your point, you can't ignore after 15 years, look what it's doing. It's doing it again. We all called it and you just can't ignore it any longer. So I think I've probably given too many people too much credit by saying they're not idiots. But I don't suspect they all are. I think we're just, we're at different stages of our learning journey. What frustrates me is when these folks haven't even picked up a book on Bitcoin. It's like, if you haven't read the Bitcoin Standard and you're dumping on it and it's just a speculative asset, that you have no credibility. Like, at least go pick up a book. Like, they don't know how the network operates. They don't understand the notion of a scarce form of money. And they haven't done their research. Go do your research and then have an opinion. But they're all to the party a bit late here. Alrighty, last one, guys. I'm going to show a video here. So this is the former CEO of Sotheby's, and he has an interesting take on the S&P 500 and the returns that you might think you're generating.
The average year, the money printer goes, call it 8 to 10%, even in the Western countries, even in the OECD nations. And the average return on the S&P 500 is, call it 9-ish percent, including dividends, maybe 9.7, maybe a little less. Mm-hmm. That it means that all of the work of the S&P 500, all of the value created there is actually the money printer. That to me was startling. I mean, to think about that. The fundamental notion that in a closed system or even an open system, when you're printing money at the rate of 8 to 10% a year, everything is losing value and the things that appear to be gaining value are not gaining value. They're just keeping you even. So you can put all your money in the S&P 500 and you're not gaining any relative wealth at all. That's a startling insight. I mean, when you really think about the entire value of the S&P 500 on average over a long period of time, not even a long period of time, is equivalent to the money printer. That's, to me, a shock. And it was a shock that said, oh my goodness, how do you think about creating wealth that is relatively greater in this economy, and you have to look hard.
All righty. So I'm going to kick this one off because I think you guys are going to have maybe some disagreement here. So first of all, I completely agree with, I think his name's Tad Smith. I completely agree with him directionally. He raises a very important point that a lot of people who think they're achieving great wealth through 10% returns don't realize that the money printers go in all the time. Now, my pushback on this comment would be, you know, if you're growing 8 to 10%, you know, broad money supply per year, and you're earning that back, you know, that equivalent back in the S&P 500, my comment would be, you might still be coming out ahead because 8% growth in the money supply doesn't necessarily equate to 8% price appreciation on your daily goods and services that you're procuring. So that doesn't mean necessarily that, you know, gas prices or the cost of ground beef or TVs or things like that necessarily appreciate at that same rate of growth. And I think historically we've seen that. So my contention is you're probably earning 10% in the stock market year over year, still coming out a bit ahead. And the reason is because that asset inflation tends to happen more quickly than appreciation in prices of daily goods, like your TV, like your groceries or whatever. And so I think his point is valid and taken, but I think maybe the bigger point that I would make is that the people who are able to invest in the S&P 500 will probably come out a bit ahead. It's the people who don't have access to buying real estate, to buying stocks, to buying, you know, investments of various kinds, assets, that are really losing in all of this. So I'm going to leave that comment, and Tony, Rick, if one of you want to chime in and take a dump on me or give your thoughts.
So you mean to tell me that, you know, one of the most manipulated market turned out to be a scam after all, and that's not even profitable. Like, talk about being taken for a ride and a fool for all these years, right? The only difference is now people are aware that this is because of the money printer. Back then, I don't think anyone was paying attention to this thing called the money printer. Now everyone and his grandmother knows about it. So the fact that he's saying this publicly and it's like it's an exposed, you know, fact now. Well, I mean, I've never been an investor in the S&P because, one, I never really understood it, but also because I never took an interest, because something, my gut feeling always told me that this whole thing was, you know, was a sham. Well, look, fast forward to today, my gut feelings have been confirmed that this has been a sham, considering how risky it is to begin with, to find out that you're putting in all this effort to maybe break even. Come on, man. It's a joke. Beyond that, I really have nothing to say. It was never my my specialty. Rick, you may have a few more words to say on this.
Yeah, Rick, one more comment I'll make just to maybe sort of prove my point. And I don't have the exact numbers or the timeline in which this happened, but I remember several years back, Apple's market cap hit $1 trillion. They were the first $1 trillion company. And within just a few years, they hit $3 trillion. It's like no major product launches, no major market that they suddenly tapped into, and magically they hit $3 trillion. But in that time span, again, I don't have the data. I don't think inflation was 200%. And so if you owned Apple stock, and this is a, you know, one example of a, you know, a large company, you would come out ahead because your daily expenditures weren't 200% in all likelihood. And so that's like a single example. But again, I still concede his point that he's making. You're not doing the winning that you think you're doing by investing in the S&P 500 or really any other asset besides Bitcoin. You know, that, so that's my other comment. Rick, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's kind of on the money, right? In terms of, you know, everybody thinks they're making money, but actually not really, because the total amount of money that's floating around is increased by the same rate. And what it's doing is it's just finding somewhere to go and hide, right? It's finding somewhere to go and live. So it runs its way into real estate and it runs itself into the S&P and stuff like that. But what's really interesting is to ask the question, well, how valuable, how much value is really in the S&P? Because the question is, if you remove the money printer, right, and you remove this free money sort of spigot that's firing all this liquidity into the market constantly, how many of these companies are actually worth, you know, what people have put into them? You know, so it's easy to say, okay, so I'm beating the market, right? So inflation's whatever, 7%, I'm getting 10% back in the market. That's where I'm putting my pension money and all this sort of stuff. I'm going to come out at least 3% ahead every year. And, you know, okay, it's a bit of a scam, but I'm still winning a little bit, right? Maybe it's not that bad. But the problem is like realizing that, right? You know, I think Bitcoin is going to correct all of this in quite a sharp and sudden way that people are not ready for. You know, all of a sudden, when you don't have all this sort of slushy money rolling around, how many of these companies are we going to find are actually zombie companies, where actually there is actually not a huge amount of value inside there? I mean, you know, you mentioned Apple, for example, went from 1 trillion to 3 trillion or whatever. But is Apple three times as more valuable than it was
No way.
back when it was worth 1 trillion? Are the products as good? Does it innovate as well as it did? I mean, you know, from where I'm sitting, they don't sort of break boundaries in the way they used to when Steve Jobs was around, right? So are these things really growing in value? Are you really beating the market massively? Because, you know, if all of a sudden we have a sound monetary standard and it wipes out a lot of this Fugazi and smoke and bullshit out of the market, you might find that actually these people have made basically nothing or maybe even lost money. You know, and the ultimate thing is that the closer you are to the money spigot, the better off you're going to be. So we are going to just continuing down that trajectory of fewer and fewer people controlling more and more and more of the overall money supply, right? So yeah, it's even if you're playing in the S&P, I would argue that, you know, your life is getting materially worse, right? So the services that your government offers you will be deteriorating, the infrastructure around you will be deteriorating. You know, maybe you would argue, okay, I've been getting 10% return on the S&P, but my food bill is only up 5%, you know, over the same 20-year period. But my question would be, well, yeah, but has the quality of your food in the last 20 years decreased by more than 5%? And I think if you take an objective view of that, you might say yes, right? Because you're still buying the same quantity of food, but back when it used to be, you know, animal fats, now it's cheap and cheerful seed oils and all this other garbage processed muck that they put in your food, right? So a lot of this cost of living increase that I think we're trying to argue doesn't keep up with the rate of monetary inflation. It's just hidden by like houses that are now built out of balsa wood, right? Like, you know, if the wind's too strong, they're falling over. Or food that's not even really food anymore. Or even your clothes and your t-shirts and your shirts that only last three washes when, you know, maybe a few generations ago, your granddad had like a shirt that lasted 10 years because it was made out of quality fabrics, you know? So I would argue it's maybe worse than what this guy is saying, and that, you know, society and everybody is just slowly, slowly moving backwards, S&P or no S&P. So yeah, it's going to be mad when people realize that precious metals wasn't the place to keep all your value, and they realize that this house that they think is worth $1 million goes back to its utility value, right? And it's just useful as a place to live, but isn't an investment. Man, it's going to be like a, you know, they talk about the earth like flipping polarity and stuff. I think it's going to be a total, the biggest rug pull of all is still coming for the people who don't own Bitcoin, and it's going to be so insane. I don't think people quite comprehend, like, if you don't have any, this is a big problem. So yeah, I think everyone's getting there though. You can see it. You can see people are starting to think.
Yeah, Rick, I completely agree. I think so much of what you just described blows up on a sound money standard. You know, like this is no what's happening today, even if whether you're right or I'm right on, you know, you're barely breaking, you know, you're barely ahead, you're barely losing, doesn't really matter on a sound money standard. None of that. The incentives completely flip. You know, money sloshing around in the economy goes away. So I think that's when productivity becomes mandatory, and that's what's lacking. And you know, like I think it's like seven companies in the S&P 500 who account for 95%, you know, 90% of the gains in its, you know, supposed value. So a lot of that really, really gets shifted around in a way that most people can't anticipate when Bitcoin's the default form of money that we by which we measure everything. All righty, gentlemen. Rick, it was so good to have you back. Tony, great chatting. For everyone listening, if do me a favor, if you're enjoying Bitcoin Banter, like, subscribe, share this with a friend who you think might enjoy it. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can learn more about our services. We help with self-custody, online privacy, privacy phones, Plan B residencies. We want to help make you self-sovereign the right way. We love doing it. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult again at thebitcoinway.com/podcast, and we hope to see you soon. Gentlemen, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
And talk soon.